You go into your shower feeling tired, but as soon as you reach for the Irish Spring, your day immediately gets better. That crisp, fresh, unmistakable Irish Spring scent zings your brain and awakens your senses. So when you finally emerge from the shower 37 minutes later because you pay the water bill so you can stay in there as long as you want, you're ready to take on the day and smell great doing it. Irish Spring Body Wash and Bar Soap. Fresh, green, Irish. Shop now at a store near you.
From their innovative practice facility to unmatched views from the fairway, the PGA of America is helping lower scores and elevate fan experiences with 5G solutions from T-Mobile for Business. Together, we're using AI-powered analytics to expand coaching tools and bringing fans closer to the pros with 5G-connected cameras. This is game-changing innovation. This is the PGA of America with T-Mobile for Business. Take your business further at T-Mobile.com/now.
Hey everyone, this is Jody Sweetin from the podcast How Rude, Tanneritos. I've been needing a quick getaway with my family, and the 2024 Hyundai Santa Fe is the perfect vehicle to take us there. It has standard third row seating, so I'm able to pack my entire family, plus pets in the car, while also having enough room for our camping essentials. Available H-Track all-wheel drive will get us through any dirt trails, and available dual wireless charging pads will ensure we never have to worry about getting stuck with a dead phone in the middle of nowhere. Visit HyundaiUSA.com. or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
12th play of the drive. Wilson gets rid of it for the touchdown to Javonte Williams. What a job by Russell Wilson under heavy pressure from Tyrell Dodson and just got it over him for the three-yard touchdown. And they have a second and goal as Latavius Murray is in the backfield next to Allen. They fake it to him, looking for Kincaid. Allen's going to take it. Touchdown, Buffalo. Good snap, good hold. Kick, perfect. And the Broncos have come to Buffalo, and they're going to leave with a win. 24-22 to get to 4-5.
Luck be a Lutz tonight. Will Lutz, he gets a do-over after he pushed one wide right from 41, seemingly giving the Buffalo Bills a narrow victory at home. But after the Bills get called for 12 men on the field, Lutz gets that do-over and pipes it from 36. The difference in a 24-22 Broncos victory over a Bills team that cannot get out of its own way. Right now, I am Dan Hansis, joined by Greg Rosenthal from the Crest Wrestling Podcast Studio and some really almost nightclub-like lighting behind you. Check this one out on YouTube. Greg, we're going to get to the Bills because I think the Bills are the bigger story in terms of their struggles and what was expected of them and what we've seen now for a couple of months. But let's start with the Broncos, a team that is now 4-5. We talked about it on the Sunday flagship show, how there is a huge middle class in the AFC of teams that have four or five losses. And now all of a sudden, and probably the Broncos left for dead at 0-3 after giving up a 70 burger, are one of those teams after a really, truly impressive and unlikely victory.
I mean, insane would be another word. This was, I think, the craziest game of the year. Like just the dumbest. Like
I think you had the second time was right there. Yeah.
Yeah. You sent the word absurd in a text. Maybe that's the best one. I can't think of a primetime game this year that was this insane. We almost have to go through it all. Cause I'm with you on the Broncos are back in it in a way, and they've shown they're not the Patriots. They're not one of the worst teams in the league. They're going to be in every game. If you give them a chance, their defense is just good enough to force four turnovers, but not good enough to stop the Bills from going down the field a couple of times in the fourth quarter. And their offense is just good enough to avoid mistakes and make a couple big drives late in the game, but not good enough to take advantage of incredible field position and all these opportunities they had to have a bigger lead. So they are that team in the middle, but I kind of want to start with the ending sequence, because I've never seen anything quite like it. Sean Payton choosing on a third down with under 30 seconds to go, instead of like throwing an incomplete pass, decides yes. to kneel on the ball because he doesn't want to give the Bills like 15 seconds. And look, I know AFC Championship, 15 seconds, things can happen. But he could have just called for an incompletion from Russell Wilson. He could have taken some time off the clock too, go back for a while, then throw a ball over someone's head on the sideline. Instead, he has so much confidence in the kicking crew to run out onto the field in that situation where the clock doesn't stop and go kick the game-winning field goal. He decides to kneel, and he feels that confidence because they did it at the end of the first half, and they did a beautiful job of it. And he kneels the ball. They run out, and he pushes the kick in all the insanity, and they lose the game if the Bills hadn't completely botched it and sent 12 men on the field. Like, the whole playoff race is different because the Bills sent 12 men on the field in that situation.
Yeah, that was my thought, that Sean Payton a little high on his own supply, and how perfectly they executed it at the end of the second quarter. But in this case, and Lutz rushed it because it wasn't as if, there were 2-1 seconds on the clock and he had to get the snap off. They had time for him to settle, but he rushed it clearly and pushed it right. And to get that second chance. And yet, as absurd as that is, and you saw Josh Allen's face on the sideline after it all played out, I didn't come out of that thinking, oh man, did the Bills get screwed here? Like, what an unlucky way for a game to end. They really had no business winning that game, in my opinion. Denver gave them so many opportunities. The fact that they missed one extra point, they botched impossibly the hold on the score in the fourth quarter that of course leaves the door open for Buffalo to take the lead. And then the Bills, they just got to get a stop then. And this is the difference. And I think, and we're going to hear from our producer, Eric Roberts, a lifelong Bills fan, in a bit, like the difference between this team and past years. And they are, at 500 or lower for the first time since 2018. After tonight, it's just like, where's the killer instinct? Where is that? We're a top team, and we kind of played with fire tonight, but we stole one by getting that late touchdown, and then we get the stop. They can't get the stop. They let the ball get to midfield, and I thought it was, when they bring the house there on second down near midfield, it worked like gangbusters, and they take down Wilson, and they have to burn its last timeout. Calling the same kind of general scheme or play again there was, to me, needlessly risky at that point. And all Wilson had to do, and I shouldn't say all he had to do, because that's a difficult play to get off with that amount of pressure, is once he saw it was the same exact type of blitz coming his way, get the ball up, basically throw an arm punt up there, and you underthrow Jerry Jeudy, and they call Teron Johnson with the DPI, and it's pretty much good night, Nurse. So Buffalo just did not execute in the game's most important moments there, and that's been a recurring theme all season.
Right. These two teams looked like 5-5 teams and a 4-5 team, because anytime Russell Wilson would make a few plays, he had, that touchdown throw to Cortland Sutton, which reminded me of the 2-point conversion from the NFC Championship game back in 2015. And Sutton makes a great play, and Wilson's avoiding mistakes. And even on that last drive, it was just like a bunch of dump off passes, but he made the right decisions. He knew when to run. Like, he was solid right when you think, wow, he's really turning the corner. He took one of those old Russell Wilson sacks, and that was that play. Troy Aikman was so frustrated because that was a situation in the game where they were already in field goal range. It was a 2nd and 4 on the 39 for the Bills. All you have to do there is get a few more yards and not take a sack. They show zero blitz before the snap. I figured they're faking it. They're not going to go Greg Williams on us and go cover zero, at the very end of the game. And they do it, and it's so well executed that they all get in so quickly. And yet Russell Wilson, unlike, I think a lot of veteran quarterbacks would have gotten rid of the ball there, and he didn't. He takes a sack, which is brutal. And for them to run it again was like, man, this is not Leslie Frazier. Sean McDermott runs a much riskier defense, and it was just dumb. And Russell Wilson, I'm sure, would love to have that throwback. I know he is happy he got bailed out by Teron Johnson. But, you know, he threw that ball up in a windy night and, you know, he underthrew him by 20 yards. That should have been a touchdown.
All right. Take it easy, Greg. Can we, because I know you're always coming after Wilson.
Just saying that wasn't it. They got the penalty because it was such a bad throw. But underthrown deep balls is what gets you a DPI. And that's kind of why no one runs those play calls anymore. And they get it. And there was more good than bad from Russell Wilson. And it just goes to show, like, there was nothing in this Bills team that was consistent tonight. Right when one part of the team, like James Cook or the running game, was getting going, they would do something bad, like fumble it. Once Josh Allen made a couple of nice throws, he would turn the ball over. The defense was completely dominant in the third quarter. The offense was, you know, keeps pissing down their leg. And the Broncos keep getting the ball out across the 50. And the Bills defense stopped them for 8 yards in four drives and forced the turnover. Yet you said it, when it came down to it in the fourth quarter, when the Bills actually get a lead, they give up two straight long drives. They can't stop Javonte Williams. And then they couldn't stop that last drive either. So it's like everything. They don't know. Like, they try to put their finger into one problem and another problem pops up.
And I know you're loath to do this, so I'm going to do it. I think Russell Wilson might not be a star quarterback in the way he was in Seattle, but he has had a far better season in year two in Denver with Sean Payton. And I think you saw that again today, because he was not overly flashy, but I thought he played a very good game overall. And he made throws. He was under pressure a lot. He had some acrobatic kind of flips when he was about to get taken out to keep the chains moving. I thought in general that Wilson has been a real bright spot for them. Especially, you have to, like, the bigger picture of, he was the most high profile, like, quarterback in terms of a trade acquisition since Peyton Manning, and he ends up having the bust of all bust seasons. So to come out of the ruins of last year and be a guy that now goes from that situation to a quarterback that's going to head into post-Thanksgiving games with his team relevant, I thought he played well today. And I think that play, again, on the third and long near midfield after he takes the sack, yeah, he underthrew Judy, but it was like he got that ball out of there and threw that big looping rainbow. And you're right, it is the slam dunk play of all slam dunk plays right now, it seems, is underthrow a receiver and you're going to get PI, and it was PI. So, man, I just – it's crazy. And the Buffalo side of this is the first time now where you could – you're going to look at the Bills and forget about, are they a real AFC powerhouse? Like, are they going to the playoffs? And they are losers of 3 of 4. They're 5-5. As I said, this is the first time they've been at 500 or below in 5 years. And their upcoming schedule is home against the Jets on Sunday, a Jets team that always gives them fits. At Philly, at KC, versus Dallas, at Chargers, layup against New England, and then at Miami. And I mean, that I would have to say, if you ask me now, that this is not a playoff team. And if this is not a playoff team, there could be big changes in Buffalo. So they are very much now at a crossroads moment. And I don't think anyone predicted that in mid-November, this would be a team that is on the brink of seeing their season fall apart. They are one of the biggest disappointments in football, bar none.
No question. I think that's all well said. I agree with it all. That's why you couldn't lose this game in particular, partly because you have an at Philly, you have an at Kansas City, you have Dallas, you have an at Miami. You got to win a couple of those games there to possibly get to 10-7. And you can't have any more slip ups in a game you're favored in. And hell, like at Chargers, they're barely favored in that at this point. You still saw, like, why they're better than the Broncos. I mean, they are. They're just not enough better to have Josh Allen just drop a ball at one point. And he had one bad interception, and people are going to remember this game as some sort of, like, catastrophic Josh Allen game. And it wasn't. It was him playing well, but having just two, like, terrible moments. And then his team also having terrible moments. James Cook fumbling the very first play of the game. Gabe Davis dropping a pass that turns into an interception. So it's Josh Allen, But it's everything. You said Russell Wilson was under pressure. Like at points in that little spot in the third quarter where I thought he ran into some sacks and took some sacks. But I don't know. I haven't seen enough out of this Bills pass rush in general consistently. Like they're not a difference-making group really anywhere. And it is shocking to me. It is really going to test their mettle. I am not going to give up on them. I'm always that guy in this podcast. Maybe it's because my favorite team of all time is the 2001 Patriots, and they were 5-5 after 10 games. And we've seen great teams that have great quarterbacks really look bad at certain points late in the season, like the Ravens when they lost, you know, two games in a row by 30 points in mid-December and then won the Super Bowl. Like, it does happen, and if it was ever going to happen, like a team led by Josh Allen could do it. But they're not – I'm starting to feel like I'm going to take the L because they are 10th in the AFC right now. Dan, I mean, they've got like teams to catch up on. Now, there's a bunch of teams that have four losses, a bunch of teams that have five losses. Almost the entire conference does. Eight teams has four or five losses. So if they could start winning games, they'd be fine. But you look at that schedule, it's hard to.
They're not going anywhere. This team's not good enough. And they're telling us, we've seen enough of a sample size where I really do think this is a, an average team, like a 9-win team maybe, and maybe that's enough to get in. Maybe it's not. And the difference, and it's, you know this, like even I was living in Boston at the time, and I enjoyed that 2001 Patriots team and that crazy playoff run because they were an underdog team and nothing was expected of them. I think this Bills team has crumbled under the weight of expectations and a growing sense of pressure that they should have been over the hump already by now. And then there was this idea that this is the year it's finally going to happen. Like Eric Roberts, you had a good line before we started. You said there's not been a good watch all season, with maybe the exception of the Dolphins game. Even the games they win, it's always a struggle. In fact, the only game they've won in the past month was that Bucs game where they were looking like they had figured some things out and then all of a sudden needed a Chris Godwin not to see a Hail Mary falling right into his hands to escape with that game.
Yeah, every game feels it's pulling teeth. Like nothing seems – the bolts aren't tight enough. I mean, even today, that first, the handoff to Cook, Josh kind of just dropped it out of his chest. You know, then Joe Buck, Troy Aikman are like, hey, man, they won the coin toss. They want to set the tone like the Bengals did against them last week. First play of the game, James Cook fumble. Like, it's just, there's something, man. There's just something. I don't know what it is. And Ken Dorsey might be the scapegoat. I don't know if Sean McDermott's going to be the guy because, I don't know. It's pulling teeth with this team right now. Even the wins outside of maybe, like you said, the Dolphins game was good. They kind of shellacked the Raiders back a couple weeks ago. But something's wrong, man. I don't know what it is. Stephon Diggs usually gets his. Today, maybe like three or four catches. It's tough. It's
and
a
Roberts,
tough
look
right
out.
Now, dude.
I have no confidence in my team, the Jets, because of the offense. But that Saleh has a beat on that Bills offense that's already vulnerable. That game could be a real slog like this as well. Like I would not be surprised if that is a game they're struggling to take care of business. And like they are in a lot of trouble.
Yeah. No, you mentioned the schedule coming up. And we talked a little bit before we started recording. And you see the schedule, and you're like, okay, you're looking it up, like, hey, here comes a murderer's row. Like you said, you got Philly, you got KC, you got Dallas, you got the Chargers. I'm going to that game, hopefully. It might be a bad night for me. But it's like you're going in that stretch, and like you said, the Jets always give them trouble. I mean, that first game of the season, weird little outlier, they still lost. But you're kind of hoping you're not 5-5 going into this kind of murderer's row of your week or your schedule. Where you got to maybe you now you're trying to steal games where you hoping you have like a little cushion. You lose one here. All right, you're on the road in Philly or you're on the road in KC. You're not trying to steal games against these teams. It's I don't know, man. I don't like speaking in a hyperbole, but like I said, I don't know. Playoffs. Something's not right, man. Something's not right. And I love Josh Allen. I'm definitely a Josh Allen apologist. He does a lot for the team. He wins games for us. But dude, something's tough, man.
He's not having a great year. He's been this team, four more turnovers today. I mean, a lot of these games are at home. Like, it's just like they're a hard team to figure out. And, to swing back to Denver, Greg, like, let's look at their schedule now because they're a team that have figured things out. And I'm giving credit to Russell Wilson. Let's give credit. You got to give some to Peyton, too, because he got this team off the mat where it could have been a total house fire there. But I will say this. I'm not in a place where I'm going to think Denver's about to make a run here. They have Sunday Night Football against the Vikings. Then they're home against Cleveland, at Houston, at Chargers, at Detroit. I don't see more than two wins there. So I don't want to take anything away from what they did tonight, but I didn't see anything about like a team that's about to make noise in the conference either.
You know, they had that Dolphins game, but basically they've been in every game this season, no matter who they play, good teams or bad teams. It's like come down to the end. They feel like that team. I think Sean Payton's a good game day coach. He's a good game planner. Sometimes you see their first down offense, you think they're, I think they're playing on some level not to lose, which is not the worst way to play if you're good at doing that. Like the 2001 Patriots very much played not to lose. And you look at Russell Wilson's stats tonight, and it's very typical of a season. He threw the ball 29 times for 193 yards, two touchdowns, no interceptions. He didn't have anything that was even close to an interception. He had a couple bad throws, took a couple bad sacks. Most of his night was looking for his first read, sometimes hit it, had like one or two nice throws. For the most part, it was like, find your check down, get 6 yards. His instincts have been better. He's in an offense that makes sense. And their running game is pretty good. You can win games that way if your defense is decent and creating turnovers like they are. They feel like they're going to win as many games as they lose, and they'll get to the end of the season and they'll be 8-9 or something like that. I don't feel much different about them than I did at 1-5. I really don't. Other than the defense now is fine. Like you look at the, like tonight they gave up 7.3 yards per play. Like when the Bills got that ball back, did you have any doubt in your mind that they were going down to score a touchdown to go up one? Cause I didn't. And I was just thinking when they got inside the 10 so quickly, I almost thought, oh, they almost got here too quickly, you know, cause now you can't burn the clock anymore. They were running the ball so well. It's not like I thought the Broncos defense was going to like stand up in that moment, but I do give Peyton credit. There's something about him that's canny. And I think he coaches up the right things, gets rid of the right players. And they've got players off the street playing pretty well for them.
Yeah. This game I thought once they botched that extra point and they let the Bills go right down the field, I thought that was it, 22-21. So they deserve credit. They found a way one more time down the field, and their season has a nice night for the fan base, and they're relevant for at least another week or two.
I do want to hit one last thing on the Bills, because I think what you said about that Patriots team not having expectations versus this Bills team is so right. And it's what I believe our friend Damashek would have called the curse of supposed to. And The worst place to be when you're supposed to be good is that you didn't actually win anything in the first place, because you're getting banged on both ends. They got that close. They got 13 seconds away. I think they would have won the Super Bowl that year if they had won that game personally. I mean, who knows? But so you have the pain of losing it that's not keeping you together, and you have all these expectations. And I do really think that you see it across the board, and this is going to test Allen and McDermott specifically and Diggs more, you know, in the rest of their leaders more than any situation possibly could. I thought we would learn a lot about them in the second half of this game, even being down 7 going into halftime. And maybe they are just kind of showing us who they are. It's too much. It's too much for them.
I hate to be that guy.
Yes.
But I'm at the point where it's like, what the hell is wrong as a fan? Like something's up. And I'm watching.
I mean, the fans are tight. The fans are like, they start booing. Like the feel good story, the Bills are back, is so over.
It's so gone. And it's like, it's at the point where what the F is happening? What's going on here, you know? And, you know, you got the Stephon Diggs stuff every season. And, you know, it's like Sean McDermott, oh, there's something up. And then Diggs, oh, we're good, Josh. Oh, we're good. And he's saying, you know, you guys are making a story out of nothing. And I've watched shows that have pointed out like a couple of these pre-game tunnel speeches from Josh Allen are like, leave it here, you know, don't, whatever's there, leave it here, nothing, you know, play for each other. And it's like, it's reading between the lines, because we're grasping at straws here as fans. It's like, what is wrong? And a lot of like, somebody, the couple people pointed out, like, what are these pre-tunnel speeches with Josh Allen saying, whatever you got going on out there, leave it at the door. We're here for each other. And it's just, I don't know. I'm really here as a fan, dude. Like,
what you said is very true, Greg, about the curse of supposed to be. And I know exactly where you are, Eric, and I apologize that sometimes I go back here, but it's a sport that I understand, and there are parallels that where the Bills are at right now is, as a Yankee fan, where I was 5 years ago when they were the baby bombers and Aaron Judge came up and they nearly they took the Astros to 7 games. It was when the Astros cheated and the Astros win that World Series. And then this window was opened up and this idea like this is their window, that's going to be the next big run. And then they fell short and then they fell short and then they fell short. And then quietly the roster was starting to have cracks and decay as well. And then by about 5 years into this quote unquote window, not only do you realize you still haven't won anything yet, wait, we're not as good as we were right when this window first opened up. And I think that's now this like cold reality.
I'm a Dodgers fan. I'm on both sides of that, Dan. I got the football and the baseball. So they beat us when they beat you guys. Now I'm watching Corey Seager win MVPs for the Rangers.
Well, there you go. At least you have your Rangers.
That's tough, man. I can't win anywhere. So.
Oh, you're a Dodgers fan. That's right. I'm sorry, buddy. Jesus Christ.
I'm a big loser.
Hey, hang in there, buddy. You're still very handsome, and you got two thumbs mostly.
Yeah.
All right, let's take a break, and then we'll do some news.
You go into your shower feeling tired. But as soon as you reach for the Irish Spring, your day immediately gets better. That crisp, fresh, unmistakable Irish Spring scent zings your brain and awakens your senses. So when you finally emerge from the shower, 37 minutes later, because you pay the water bill so you can stay in there as long as you want, you're ready to take on the day. And smell great doing it. Irish Spring Body Wash and Bar Soap. Fresh, green, Irish. Shop now at a store near you.
What's up? I'm John Wall.
And I'm CJ Toledano, and we're starting a new podcast presented by DraftKings called Point Game. We're now joined by 3-time NBA Sixth Man of the Year, elite bucket getter. Let's please welcome Jamal Crawford to Point Game, King of the Court one-on-one tournament. If they had it back in your prime, do you think you could have took it all?
I'm going to be honest with you. I don't think I could have took it all, but I think I would have shocked a lot of people. I think Kobe and everybody in their prime, Kobe would win a one-on-one contest.
Yeah, because you got to think, he's going to guard. He don't care about guarding.
He's going to guard.
He's going to guard. Like, you see him in the Olympics, he's going to guard. And then on top of that.
Like that, see that?
Ladies and gentlemen, please welcome Sam Cassell to Point Game.
I remember you came out from crying tears. Crying tears. I mean, he was in a culture shock. And then he's going to withdraw us about winning.
Remember what I told you? I said, OG, you think I can get paid and go back and play in college? Because it ain't it.
Check out Point Game with John Wall and CJ Toledano on the iHeartRadio app, DraftKings YouTube, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Spectrum One is a big deal. You get Spectrum Internet with the most reliable internet speeds, free advanced Wi-Fi for enhanced security and privacy, and a free Spectrum Mobile Unlimited line with nationwide 5G included, all while saving big. For the big speed, big reliability, and big savings you want, get Spectrum One. Just $49.99 a month for 12 months. Visit spectrum.com/bigdeal for full details. Offer subject to change. Valid for qualified residential customers only. Service not available in all areas. Restrictions apply.
All right, we are back. It's a therapy session on a Monday night as Western New York and Eric Roberts' corner of Los Angeles is just under siege as the Bills start to fade away. I don't know. I am still kind of in shock that they did not find a way in this game. But let's see what else is going on in the NFL right now. Let's start here in Los Angeles, where Matthew Stafford is ready to return to action. He's expected to play in Week 11 with the recently signed Carson Wentz likely backing him up. That's kind of just a funny tandem for some reason, Stafford and Wentz. Here is Rams head coach Sean McVay on the QB situation.
No, Matthew should be ready to go. He was out there taking part in individual today. He's making great progress. And so we're operating with the anticipation and expectation that he is going to be good to go. He'll be pushing through, but we expect him to be able to start and play and do his thing and lead the way this week.
What is that? What? I don't know. I got to get Jordan Rodriguez back on the horn. What do we have going on? There's a huge sign in Sean McVay's office. in the colors and font of the Rams that reads in all caps, urgent enjoyment. What is that? Can we get a screen grab of that, Eric?
That's what led to him becoming a dad a week ago. A little exactly. Urgent enjoyment.
That's what I think of.
Same. I'm going to enjoy seeing Matthew Stafford back. I wanted to get this into the show. It is newsworthy because they're more or less out of the race unless they can go on a surprising run. They got the Seahawks and the Cardinals the next 2 weeks. Two teams they generally play well against, including week one when they trounced the Seahawks. So you never know. They're not a crazy team to go on a little run here. But we never hit Carson Wentz signing with this team. And it is something crazy that the two guys, I was thinking of Wes, because 2017, those were the two biggest stories in the NFL. If you go back to our podcast, the 2017 season, I bet we spent more time talking about Sean McVay in his first season as coach and the revolutionary way he was calling the plays into Goff, before the 15 seconds, kind of telling him what to do right before that. And Wes, we were fascinated by it. They were a fascinating team. And also Carson Wentz in his second year, not coming out of nowhere, but having an MVP campaign run that no one really saw coming before that injury cut it short. And here we are 6 years later. And if they had just had Carson Wentz, on their roster a few weeks ago and maybe an offseason to get him ready, I think they'd maybe beat the Packers, had a much better chance.
I don't know, man. Wentz has been kind of trash for a couple of years.
I'm just saying, if they had any normal backup quarterback, they could have beat the Packers. But it's just crazy that they're all together, and I'm still glad that Carson Wentz is not playing this week that we're getting Matty Stafford.
Yeah, but it does feel, because Stafford is, he battles the injury bug at this stage of his career. I do believe we should be in line for a couple of late December, perhaps early January, Carson Wentz starts here in Los Angeles. So plenty of tickets at SoFi Stadium. Let's get in there and check them out and have some urgent enjoyment of our own. What is that?
That must have been there all year. I don't want Carson Wentz. I want to go to that Thursday night game against the Saints. So I do not want Carson Wentz. But I'm telling you, these teams need to be criticized a little bit more for how they've handled these backup quarterback situations. The fact that the Rams just decided, they got into the middle of the season and they sold the rest of their team down the river. Yeah, to start Brett.
Greg, don't get me started on that that situation.
Just you totally could have just had a normal backup quarterback for $1 million and it would have been fine. Carson Wentz would have been fine this whole time.
Doesn't Urgent Enjoyment sound like a Collective Soul album that came out in 2017 and nobody even knew it existed?
Maybe Soul Asylum.
Maybe. That's weird. It's weird how you stress those words. Soul Asylum.
Soul Asylum. Just saw Dave Perner on stage at the Liz Phair Exile in Guyville show. How about that?
She brought out Perner? Wow, that's interesting. Bob and I went to a Soul Asylum concert about 7 years ago at the Troubadour, and I kept on looking around to see if maybe Winona Ryder would be there, Perner's ex. How Dave Perner, the man literally looked and almost certainly smelled like a homeless person, was locking down 1992 Winona Ryder, an all-time Zeuser favorite. I'll never quite have a handle on that one. All right, in other news, the Saints are dealing with quote-unquote fairly significant injuries to both wide receiver Michael Thomas and cornerback Marshawn Lattimore. These are this is according to Pro Football Talk. These are injuries that are not expected to end the seasons of the respective players, but it's going to cost them potentially multiple weeks. Better news for Derek Carr. He avoided a serious right shoulder injury that was confirmed by Dennis Allen on Monday. He said the shoulder checked out fine. They have a bye this week. So Carr is a tough son of a gun. I would imagine you're going to see him out there when they come back for their week 12 matchup with the Falcons, but don't expect to see Lattimore and Thomas.
The Saints fans were enjoying the Jameis experience more than I expected, considering it ended with two interceptions and they seem about done with Carr. I don't, I don't necessarily think Carr's a problem. He's not necessarily the solution there either. But Dennis Allen did make it clear Derek Carr is absolutely our starting quarterback. He will absolutely be starting. And losing Lattimore is big. This has been one of the healthiest teams in the league. It's one of the reasons why I think Dennis Allen has kind of avoided national attention for the poor job he's doing, because they have the easiest schedule in the league. Literally the rest of the way, it's the 32nd hardest schedule. It is the easiest schedule the rest of the way. They've had a pretty easy schedule to begin with. I don't think they're a well-coached team, and there's something there. They got to be careful, or else things could get sideways.
They also, by the way, added Jason Pierre-Paul, the veteran pass rusher, to their building. So we'll see if he gets any level of run in their defense. We've talked about what my words specifically meant for CeeDee Lamb and his 2023 outlook. He was having a productive but not flashy season for the Cowboys, but in the last 3 weeks, he's been completely unstoppable. He's had three straight games of at least 150 yards, 11 for 150 and two touches in a wipeout of the Giants on Sunday, and he is feeling himself right now. He told the Cowboys website in an article posted Monday that, quote, "I'm the top receiver in this game. There's no question about it. If there is, I'll see you again next week." And I don't know if I agree with that, because I think Justin Jefferson is the best, but I have always thought CeeDee Lamb had the potential to be this level of a game breaker, and he's on my short list. I would probably put him in my top three, if not top five, wide receivers, and he is certainly showing that right now. And Greg, for a guy that primarily, as you pointed out a couple days ago, plays the slot, it's kind of unusual to have somebody that's like electric at this level playing the way he does.
Yeah, because he can do it all. He can make those tough contested catches. He can just cream people after the catch, and he can play outside and he can run all the routes. It's crazy, because I wanted to throw this out there just because you're Mr. CeeDee Lamb, but also because, like, all right, let's at least think about this, like, where he would stand. Justin Jefferson's hurt. If Justin Jefferson's healthy, yes, but I'm going to say, like, right now, this season, so Justin Jefferson's kind of taking himself out of the mix. So is Davante Adams, because of the team he's on, and who knows, maybe he's getting a little older. So I, you know, do the math, and it's kind of like Tyreek Hill, I think, for this season would maybe have the belt. AJ Brown would be right there. And CeeDee Lamb would probably be next. And if I was starting a team just like for the next 5 years, out of those three, I don't know, I might take CeeDee Lamb. Like, just because he feels a little more scheme independent, that you could put him in any situation. AJ Brown is an absolute dog. So for this season, I'm giving CeeDee Lamb the bronze, but the fact that that's even true, I had to think about it. I was like, that's pretty impressive.
I think Devontae is trapped in a terrible situation. I still think he's probably at the top or near the top of his powers. Jefferson is my number one. Yeah, I'd probably slot him in maybe right there at three with Tyreek behind him, and then I'd put either Jamar Chase or Stephon Diggs at five. Those would be my top five. And you know what? Jeez, I mean, Cooper Kupp.
That's what I mean.
I mean, it's hard, but he's a little bit older.
I think CeeDee, if you just watch him, I just think he hasn't been thought of as that talented because it's been a slow build. And like, he is that talented. You can make arguments for any of those guys, but he's right there in terms of his skill set. He's awesome.
And if you want an idea of his skill set, yeah, watch that. There's really no reason otherwise to watch that Cowboys-Giants game, because it was basically varsity v. JV. But he had two touchdowns, one on a design running play where he just beat everybody to the edge and scored easily, had the touchdown. And just like with him lately on this run he's on, it's just a collection of 34-yard receptions like that just are setting up that team for success. The Patriots, moving on, do not have a wide receiver that we could add to that conversation, and really have not since Randy Moss.
Wait, you don't like Pop Douglas? I think he had like 75 yards.
They took a chance on Jack Jones in the draft a couple of years ago, a high-level impact player for college who had some off-the-field issues. He's turned out to be it appears, a bit of a knucklehead as a professional as well, and mix that with all the dysfunction in the Patriots these days, and this was not a marriage made to last, and he is indeed waived by the Patriots. He played just 10 snaps in their loss to the Colts, and his snaps had been declining week by week by week with various drama around him, and it's just yet another story of darkness in a fairly bleak season in New England.
Yeah, he played so well to start last season. I'm trying to look at the PFF numbers. He looked like an absolute steal that they might be building their team around for a little while. He was ranked, according to PFF, as a top 20 cornerback in their grades for people that had at least 400 snaps. He was 16th. And I could buy that because he couldn't really tackle, but he covered so well. And it's just emblematic of what's going on with this season. J.C. Jackson was left home. Trent Brown missed practice last week. He was injured, but there was also a personal matter, which was also the way that they described why J.C. Jackson and Jack Jones were having issues. So considering Trent Brown's history, and he's a good player, he's one of the better left tackles in the league, I think, still when he's on the field. That's got my attention. There's just like a lot going on here, like of what happens to bad teams and bad organizations. And then now it's just the Patriots that's that bad organization. It's crazy.
Yeah, it really is. And finally, the Panthers, and I just feel for Frank Reich. I mean, is there a guy that, you know, he just needs to be released from a very dark situation? And I think he'll be a happier person for it come January. Because it all seems to be coming to a head for the Panthers.
A one and done? Ugh.
I don't know. I guess, yeah, I guess maybe you think he gets 2 years, but this has been bad. But there's also, when you do things like give up play calling duties to your offensive coordinator, Thomas Brown, I believe 3 weeks ago, and then, you know, after they got their win over the Texans, we played it on this show, the emotional speech he gave and gave the game ball to Brown. But the offense is cratered. It's actually been worse with Brown calling plays. And now there is open discussion, and Reich acknowledged to the team's website that he's just really, quote, thinking the whole thing through about taking back play calling. This kind of, I'm sniffing this one out a little bit, Greg, that Brown is struggling with the job, and there's some grumbles maybe in the locker room about the job he's doing, and it might be less about him deciding that he needs to step in for Brown and the team is unhappy with the direction. That's just a theory of mine, but him taking back over his play caller just is another sign that they don't know what they're doing or what they're trying to do, or and I would imagine ownership doesn't love the look either.
It's all felt like meddling potentially from ownership, because that's been consistent with this ownership group. And to put a better spin on it, it might be the idea that you need to make Bryce Young look better over the next 8 games, or, you know, that's it. Right. And if I'm going to go down and I'm Frank Reich and this is my last bite at the apple, I'm going to go down doing it my way, calling my plays, doing whatever I can and not handing it off, because I might not have much time here. When they're doing split screens, Dan, I saw this one in Carolina of Bryce Young's first 9 games and Jimmy Clausen's first 9 games. And they're like, can you choose which one is which?
Oh no. A/B test.
They're basically the same. And it's like, okay, I've been the one saying Bryce Young's a little better than people have been giving him credit for. In the last 2 games, he's taken big steps back, and that's worrisome. And that's why, look, a guy like Frank Reich wants to at least take some control.
And it's, you know, and I've always kind of pushed back when you've, and this has typically been privately, but you've always been like, man, I miss that Jerry Richardson. And I'm always like, why would you say that, Greg? But I think what you're saying is that the new ownership, it just feels like things haven't gotten better, and the meddling of an owner is never something that typically leads to success. So yeah, I'm going to give you the W on that one.
Not what I said. Never said that. You can go back and listen to our Jerry Richardson conversations. Actually, I have no idea what we said back then, what we were allowed to say, but
you've softened on the old man in the
not a man that left in a blaze of glory, but did always have that bragging right that I believe he was, and I guess still is, the only former player ever to own an NFL team. So that's something.
Also, I think the only former NFL player to turn into an owner and then have his statue melted down.
That's right. They took down the statue, and they had to.
They had to turn his statue into liquid magma.
It was a good job. It was a good job taking down that statue. A lot of statues.
Well, that's what you said initially, but, you know. Now you're like, put the statue back up. He has a place in history.
Well, believe me, there were like some, I believe, within a strange corner of Panthers fandom. But we're really down a weird road like here.
That was like a kind of a crusade you've been on in general. Like, put back all the statues into the South. Put them all back. Like, Greg, calm down.
You've done it. You've made me feel uncomfortable with your untruth.
How much further can I take this before Greg says, hey, can we take that out of the show? I think there's one more joke, the rule of threes here that Eric is scrubbing. But I don't want Eric to scrub because Eric is scrubbing the filth of the 2023 Bills off himself right now.
Man, I mean, it's tough. We're tough on you, Eric. You know, in a way that we probably wouldn't with our own teams in such a.
I got a pretty good loofah in the tub, so I can handle it.
You know what, Eric? Light some candles, get the bubble bath out, and just sink into it, and because you deserve it, get a glass of Pinot Grigio.
I always kind of joke in these primetime games, like Buffalo going to Buffalo. Like, as a kid growing up, it's like they went all those years without a primetime game. And like one of my first like memories is the lateral pass in Tennessee was the, you know, and then they had the Monday night game against Tony Romo. He threw like five picks. They still lost. I was at the Nathan Peterman game where he threw five interceptions. It's just, you know, it comes down to those things. It's just like you get hardened, you get a callus when mm-hmm. it comes to Bills and just watching them. But these primetime games, they just always kind of find a way.
They need to get them out of primetime. They've been living in primetime. They just did the tour. They did TNF, SNF, and Monday Night Football in a row. And they need a break. Yeah. I think everyone needs a break from the Bills. They need a break from themselves.
They need to go play some quiet, you know, 1 p.m. window games and just get their season back on track.
I think the next couple, because I watch most of them with my family before I come in and work and do the stuff for ATN, you know, the 10 a.m. Pacific time games. So I get a nice little, like, window, watch with my mom, come in at work. I think the next couple are 1 p.m. Pacific time.
No, they're all 4:25 national games. This is the curse of being good. You don't get to have a buried game until you play the Patriots.
Randy's my neighbor, so he was over here watching with me, and I kind of ran through like a QB rundown. What I've like, remember Chad Tool, EJ Manuel, JP Lossman era. You know, it's just like
there were years where were playing 16 1 p.m. Sunday windows.
Yeah, man. You'd lose, and nobody would know. Today, when Josh threw the interception, actually, when James Cook had that weird fumble that bounced back into his hand somehow miraculously.
Right.
He dribbled it down the floor. Yeah, I mean, he ran incredibly, except for the two times he fumbled.
Yeah, no, and that was one thing. It's like, why are we throwing the ball? Like, James Cook, outside of, you know, the dumb fumble and the fumble he got back into his belly somehow miraculously, he was actually doing pretty well. But, you know, it's like throughout the course of this game, I would look down at my phone. It's like 24 text messages. Group messages just ripping me apart, and I'm just like, guys, this is not new to me at all in any way, in any capacity. Like, this is Buffalo. Like, we find ways to, you know, my dad lived through the four Super Bowls. I was a wee lad at that time, so thankfully I didn't have to do that stuff. But I was talking to my mom tonight when we were watching this game right here on my couch, and I'm like, she's like, yeah, we stopped doing Super parties after the second one.
Oof.
It's just like, you know, it's just gonna happen. I don't know. It's
cute though that Randy was over on the couch. I love
that. Well, I was gonna say, I think that might be the thing that, you know, is buried, that listeners will be tickled by, that Eric and Big Funk, they are neighbors in addition to close colleagues.
He's probably like, I can see his front door from right where I'm sitting, and he's probably about, you know, what is that, like maybe 25 yards from my window to his front door. So we're homies.
This movie might be kind of before your time, but I'm getting vibes of office space where Peter Gibbons had his neighbor Lawrence, and they could just hear each other through the walls.
Yeah.
And, you know, there was there's just a connection that comes to you through that.
Yeah. Well, we worked together in morning radio before the NFL. Yeah. He actually moved to the NFL before me, kind of hooked me up in the NFL job interview section. So yeah, we have a history. He's my friend. He's a good guy.
They call him Funk. Good. Yep. That's nice. See, it's a family show around.
Yeah, definitely.
So even when things are going bad for our football teams, there's a lot to be thankful for. And thank you to everyone for listening to the Monday edition of Around the NFL. We'll be back. And by the way, we did our game rewatch on NFL Plus. The Texans' thrilling win, their latest thrilling win, this time over the Bengals. So check that out. And then we'll be back with Connie Fox and Mark Sessler on Wednesday. Heed the call.
You go into your shower feeling tired, but as soon as you reach for the Irish Spring, your day immediately gets better. That crisp, fresh, unmistakable Irish Spring scent zings your brain and awakens your senses. So when you finally emerge from the shower, 37 minutes later, because you pay the water bill so you can stay in there as long as you want, you're ready to take on the day and smell great doing it. Irish Spring Body Wash and Bar Soap. Fresh, green, Irish. Shop now at a store near you.
Managing your diabetes just got easier. The powerful new Dexcom G7 lets you see your glucose numbers on your compatible watch and phone without finger sticks. And because Dexcom G7 is the most accurate CGM system, you can be confident in your food, exercise, and medication decisions. And all those decisions can lead to big results, like more time in range and lower A1C. Get started at Dexcom.com.
Dexcom data on file 2023. If your glucose alerts and readings from the G7 do not match symptoms or expectations, use a blood glucose meter to make diabetes treatment decisions. For a list of compatible devices, visit Dexcom.com/compatibility.
Whether you're a savvy spender maximizing your savings with cashback rewards, a thrifty rate watcher seeking the lowest interest, or a travel enthusiast looking for extraordinary perks, Kemba Financial Credit Union has a Visa to complement your lifestyle and unique needs. Apply today at Kemba.org to unlock a limited-time 2% cashback on purchases and pay 0% interest on balance transfers for an entire year with a new Visa from Kemba. You deserve a card that works for you. Restrictions apply. Offer ends June 30th, 2024.